I'm ready.
All right, so I am here with Elizabeth Pfeiffer, and you are currently the commissioner, correct?
I am one of three full-time commissioners in Kenosha, yes.
Nice, mm-hmm. Nice. How long have you had that position?
So this is my fifth year. I was sworn in 2016, and then I started on my birthday in 2017, which is January 3rd.
Nice.
So
nice.
It's easy to remember my start date.
Nice. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Birthdays are, that's a nice way to start.
Yeah, everyone said, why are you starting on your birthday? And I'm like, well, number one, it's no one wants to go out January 3rd anyways, because you've had all everything leading up to it. Mm-hmm. And number two, I'll always remember.
Yeah. So. Perfect. Awesome. So you are running for the circuit court judge seat in the 6th branch, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Judge Wagner's retiring, so there's an open seat.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Fun fact for everyone out there, people know that I was adopted by my grandmother. Judge Wagner was actually the woman that handled the whole situation.
Oh, so there you go.
Yeah, so when I saw that there was a whole thing for, you know, the circuit court judge, I was like, well, these people are very important because they allow people to, like, if Judge Wagner wasn't the type of woman that she was, who knows where, you know, I could have, or my brothers would have ended up, you know?
That's true. The judge would decide. Right. So that's very true.
Right. So having these people, having the right people in these positions, especially for the community, is very important. It's good to know who these people are, and that's why I wanted to bring you in. So thank you for coming in.
I appreciate the opportunity. I think it's so important that you get to know all the candidates and then choose for yourself who you think is right for the job. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. So before we get into the juicy details, I suppose, let's I kind of want to just hear about your background a little bit. You're a native of Kenosha?
So that's the question. I was born in Marshfield, but came here in second grade. So I have one group of friends who says you can say native for that. Mm. And I'm over in the other camp. I don't think I'm native because I wasn't born here or brought home here from the hospital. Mm. So I say that I'm a Wisconsin native, Kenosha raised. Mm. That way it sort of covers it. But we came here in second grade, which was 1980.
Okay.
So I'm dating myself, but a lot of my stories sound like the Goldbergs TV show.
Okay.
It was 1980 something, and these things happened. So I love that show.
I like it too.
Yeah, so I went to St. Mark's.
Okay.
And then for 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, I went to Lincoln Junior High.
Okay.
And then I switched over to Tremper, I went to Tremper and graduated from there as well.
Nice.
So there was a big difference between St. Mark's in Lincoln, and I really appreciate that I went to Lincoln and just learned so much there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, especially that area in that school, it's pretty multicultural. You know, there's honestly where it's located, I know it's something different now, but...
Mm-hmm.
Where it's located, you really have like a full spectrum, you know, of different backgrounds that end up going to that school. You know, there's so many kind of different areas that kind of come together there. So I could imagine the type of experience that you would have going there.
Yeah. So, you know, it goes down into Allendale was in their district. Mm-hmm. And then the kids that went to Greveno was in there. And then, of course, Lincoln had their elementary school right there. And it really was just this broad kind of cross section of Kenosha.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I fell in love with basketball.
Okay.
And got my start. St. Mark's, we had a team too, but that's lots of great stuff at Lincoln. Lots of good memories.
Nice. And then where did you end up going to school? You went to school for law?
Yes, so I did undergrad first at Madison. That's where my father went, my brother went, my uncle went, so that's where Liz went. I mean, I could have gone anywhere, but it just made sense. I had a double major, political science, and there was a major called behavioral science and law, and that cross-sectioned nicely, so some of the classes counted for both.
Oh, nice.
Right, and then I did a minor, they call it a certificate, and that was in criminal justice, and some of those classes counted for all of them, so I had it all coordinated there.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I planned that one, and I graduated there with distinction. And that's sort of their version of the cum laudes and things like that. Madison doesn't say that. They say with distinction. And then I went to University of Virginia.
Okay.
That's their School of Law program in Charlottesville.
Okay.
And so I only applied to Madison because that was sort of the family school. Mm-hmm. When it came time for law school, I wanted to see what else was out there, where I could go. I sort of was just ready to get out, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I toured some schools, and that was my favorite by far. It was... Number one, it was a top 10 law school. So that nationally ranked, to me, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, it's very livable. Charlottesville's beautiful. It's very mild winters, but the people there in the School of Law were very supportive. Mm-hmm. I'm still friends with people from law school.
Nice.
Not that I'm not from, you know, college or other places, but there's just something about that community down there that's really special. Mm-hmm. And I knew, I toured other schools and I didn't feel it. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, there's a worse places to be for 3 years. And I ended up loving it. I had a great time. Graduated, and then I went west.
Oh, nice. How yeah. How far west?
Denver,
okay.
Yeah.
What did you end up doing out there?
So, there was this Dixie Chicks song that was sort of popular.
Okay.
And it was She Needs Wide Open Spaces, and that's sort of how I felt. Now that I'd left Wisconsin and I went to Virginia, and I liked that, I thought, well, where else can we go?
Mm.
You're only young once, right. You know, mid-20s, and no kids, no attachments, like, let's just see. So I visited Denver, and as soon as I saw the Rocky Mountains, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, this is the wide open spaces, so let me come here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity to work at their district attorney's office in Denver, and that's one of the biggest in our country, and it's hopping, and there's a lot of crime. That sounds weird to say as a bonus for mm-hmm. going to a city, but when you want to be a district attorney,
mm-hmm.
but likewise, it's a very livable, safe city. So it had that combination of, I want to be a district attorney, but I'll feel safe here as well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the mountains and people in Colorado, there's a lot of people from all over
mm-hmm.
who fall in love and go there. And John Denver
mm-hmm.
changed his name to Denver because mm-hmm. he loved it so much. And you can see why. So I had that opportunity to be a DA out there, and
mm-hmm.
I grabbed it.
Nice.
Yeah.
How long did you end up being out there?
So I was in Colorado for 8 years. Mm. I was with the district attorney for around 3-ish.
Okay.
I did misdemeanors, felonies. They have a drug court program.
Mm.
I almost said we, not there anymore. They have a drug court program very similar to Kenosha County's.
Okay.
And so I was the prosecutor, one of a few of us, of course, in that unit for a while. The focus is on rehabilitation
mm.
as opposed to incarceration.
Mm.
And then, yeah, I did a lot of trials. So I say they throw you in the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a life preserver there. You have a trial partner. And so, and they've maybe been doing it for a year. And so you would say, okay, what do we do here? And you go for it. So I was second chairing, I think within a couple weeks,
uh-huh.
a jury trial, which is what I wanted. I was so ready to try cases, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I did my own solo a few months later, where it was me, the jury.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so all of those years of school,
mm.
I finally had that moment, and very fond memories.
Oh, wow. How did you feel when it got to that point? Did you feel like you were prepared? I mean, I know you went through a lot of schooling,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes even going through a lot of education, when you actually get thrown into the fire, so to say, you aren't necessarily always really completely prepared for it, but how do you think you handled it?
So law school teaches you how to think like a lawyer, but not act like a lawyer,
mm.
is what I like to say. We did have a trial advocacy class where I would do, you know, I did a mock trial there.
Mm.
I did my first bench trial just to the judge my last year of law school.
Mm-hmm.
I interned for a year with a district attorney's office there in a super small county between Charlottesville and Richmond.
Okay.
Teeny tiny.
Mm.
It's a Commonwealth attorney, not a district attorney, but
okay.
She was the Commonwealth attorney. I believe her ex-husband was a defense attorney. Everybody was related. It was just one of those little counties. But I learned a lot about counties and processing, and that was my first trial. And then in Denver, I was so ready to go that I would sit and watch other people doing trials. I wouldn't have done that. I would do this differently. I'm ready.
Mm.
And then when the moment gets there, you're nervous and your instincts take over, and I learned from every trial. Sometimes when it went south,
mm-hmm.
maybe things didn't go well, I learned the most from that. So
mm-hmm.
I remember an incident where I tried to introduce some photos through a witness,
mm-hmm.
and it just didn't go well, and it was my fault. And afterwards, I really sat down and figured out, how is this never gonna happen again?
Mm-hmm.
And then likewise, when things went well, I'm like, I need to remember that that's how that went.
Mm-hmm.
So I had learned to think like a lawyer in law school, and then I was learning to act. And that's why I like the deep end of the pool. There's no time for panic. There's no time for stress. We are going to trial after lunch. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's grab a piece of pizza and figure out our jury questions and what we're doing. And
mm-hmm.
you get really efficient really fast, or you just don't make it. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Nice. It seems like it would be a interesting job to have, you know, just because you never really know what you're going to be hit with. Some things might be situations that are just like, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake, and then maybe something goes left or something gets introduced that no one was expecting. So, but I could see that being an exhilarating position to have as well, just because, if you're the type of person that likes to deal with those types of situations, I suppose.
Yes. So for me, it wasn't sustainable long term. It's very intense. So I would do sometimes 2 or 3 trials a week, not often the 3. The 2, not as much, but maybe 1 every other week, right, or rotations. And it is, you're sort of living on a roller coaster where you're preparing for the trial, you do your trial, and they do them fast out there. Misdemeanors, there's just a 6-person jury. You can pick those very quickly. And so there were times where we were done in a day, and we would do trial calls Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I could have had a trial Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and sometimes we did. And so you're right. I'm glad I did it when I was young. It was exciting. I got all that trial experience, and I was so comfortable in the courtroom by the time I was done that it was really was a second home. It just, yeah, that's how I like doing it.
Nice. So, yeah, it seems like you're bringing a lot of experience with you to the table.
So for criminal, yes. So that was the DAs. Then after that, I went to a private law firm. And that was more, there were no jury trials there. They were all with an administrative law judge. We call it a bench trial when it's just a judge. Yeah. I did a lot of those trials. That was workers' compensation. We also handled insurance and employment. But I did a lot of the litigation trial work there as well. And then I was there for a little over 5 years. And then Wisconsin just sort of pulled me back.
Was it something that happened with family or something, or you just kind of got homesick?
A little bit. So it's funny because when I was 22 and I'm going to Virginia, I could not drive my car on the highway fast enough, right? I mean, I had my dog in the back seat, little miniature poodle. It was stacked so high with clothes that she was like above the seats, and we were just gone. And then the same thing for Colorado, same dog. Colorado bound. And the more time I spent away from family, the harder it got. And I didn't think that would happen. I thought it would get easier as I got older. It got harder, and no one had told me that would happen. So I know one of the big events that happened was my brother had his second child, a little girl. And I went and visited, and I was like, why am I not here? Well, I have to fly home. We make arrangements. I see you guys once a year, twice a year. And it really did get harder and harder. And so that was one of the biggest motivators to come back, was just the call of the family.
You get a little bit more mature. You start, thinking about the stuff that probably matters a little bit more. You know, having a niece or a nephew, wanting to see them grow up and, you know.
Or, you know, I would call my parents on a Sunday, and my sister would be over there just doing a quick barbecue or something fun. And my brother and sister all lived within driving distance. So I'd be the one on the phone from Colorado saying, well, that sounds like a lot of fun. You got, and then I'd hang out. I had a different dog at that point. Me and the dog. You know, I have friends and other things out there, but it's not the same thing as family. So that really, that was the biggest motivator. Come back. And now I live 7 minutes from my parents. Never saw that coming.
Hey, it happens.
I know. Look, I went all around and then came right back.
That's how it goes. And that's kind of what the parents always say, right? They're like, you'll be back. You're leaving now, but you'll be back. Seven minutes away.
Mine didn't say that. Mine were so, I think that's maybe why I came back. They were so open to it. There was never any, are you sure you don't want to be in the Milwaukee DA's office? What about Chicago? It was always, we've got you. You go do what you need to do, and we're always here. We're a plane ride away or a car ride.
Awesome.
So that was awesome, and I think that really helped. I wasn't trying to get away from them. They were letting me go, and you're right, when I came back.
Are they originally from Wisconsin as well?
They both are.
Okay.
They're not from Kenosha, so they're from Beaver Dam, my dad. And then he grew up in Milwaukee, too.
Okay.
Then my mom's from Edgerton over by Janesville and all of that. We're Wisconsin family.
I can see maybe see them being like, well, we've been in Wisconsin this whole time. You have an opportunity to see stuff.
Oh, actually, so my parents traveled a lot. And maybe that's why they encouraged me without the feelings that I wouldn't come back. My dad was in the military.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So he enlisted after school. into the Air Force. So he signed up for Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
They were married in 1964. Oh, wow. So he had graduated, got married, graduated one weekend, got married, and was gone into the Air Force. Mm. So my mom, I think the first year of her marriage, she lived at home with her parents.
Oh, wow.
And he was overseas. Mm-hmm. He did two tours in Vietnam.
Wow.
And then they lived in Germany, and my brother was actually born in Germany.
Okay.
And he had dual citizenship, so I would always tease him that he can't be president. Which I don't know if that's accurate or not, but he doesn't want to be president, so it never really mattered. So they lived over there. Then when they moved back, they actually settled in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had a position there just temporarily for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But he never supported University of Ohio, and we're very thankful for that, mm-hmm. because you can't come back from that if you go to UW.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Marshfield, and then, well, then we went to O'Hare, and then here. So we did a little bouncing.
Oh, nice.
Like good military family. He was out of the military at that point, but we bounced a little.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to bounce a little as an adult sort of made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice, I see. So, I mean, the family aspect, you seem to be, I wouldn't say really family oriented, but it seems to be something that actually matters to you.
Absolutely.
So kind of seeing you come in wanting to, you know, be involved and then being the family court commissioner, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
So being able to deal with families yourself, mm-hmm. and then also kind of being connected to your own family, I would say, would be an important aspect of having that position. Because if you're not
mm-hmm.
connected really to family, maybe I would imagine it would be easy to kind of handle things not necessarily with the same umph, I guess you would say, or same
sure.
connection or feeling that you would have if you weren't connected to your own family.
Definitely. I can empathize, I can have my compassion for people, like I have a very strong family,
mm-hmm.
but I also, one thing I like to tell people is I have a very great relationship with my dad,
mm-hmm.
and then my husband is an amazing father to our children,
mm-hmm.
and so when I come into this, and I have two parents in front of me, the mom and the dad, I'm really lucky that I have this background where I had, and my mom too, so I have two parents who were amazing role models. So when I see parents who want me to set up placement schedules, custody, let's figure out disputes, I see that both have the potential to be what I have seen, as opposed to maybe having a different viewpoint. Not everyone does though.
Right.
You know, we all have our own backgrounds and it may affect people and it may not. And for me, I rely on that. You know, sometimes people will argue gender in my courtroom about why certain things should happen because of the gender of the person. And that just should not matter. It doesn't. If they're ready, willing, and able, I want safe, stable environments. Do you have that? Let's do this then. And I also tell people a lot, one of my standard things I say, and I really believe it, is if you do this right, even though you're not together, because they're obviously in court, they're not. But if you do this right, this child's going to have one family unit here and another family unit here and all the love bringing them up. That's the gift that parents can give. So I feel passionately about that when I'm in court, trying to get people to get to that point. Some people will never get there, but sometimes people do. It sort of sheds some light on things for them too. So I find my background to be very helpful with a lot of the cases I handle, not just family, but also when I fill in, sometimes if there's a conflict with Commissioner Keating, and those would be on the CHIPS cases and the neglect cases, where you've got the parents who either are unwilling or unable to be there for their children. And so that's similar, but obviously different issues going on there. But again, we're looking for the parents to, can you take care of this child and protect them? And you see that in those cases too. And again, I look to see which of you can do that. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. Especially, I mean, I would say it's a common misconception, but it's something that gets thrown around a lot in Wisconsin. People say like Wisconsin's a women's state. Like, you know, I'm a father. I have a really good relationship with the mother of my children. We're not together, but we co-parent and we make things, you know, we get it done. And, you know, we're just there to love and support our children. And we get along, we can hang out and watch movies together with the kids and all that stuff.
And they probably love it because that's fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's good to hear someone say, like, that's not how it should go. You know, a lot of people get discouraged. You know, I've talked to a lot of a lot of men, I'll say, that just completely give up on wanting to be in their children's lives because of volatile situations with the mother of their children, and them assuming just because of what they heard that they have no shot at all, you know?
And that's important, because that's a stereotype that we have about family court. And I will tell you, though, I've heard that, Commissioner Pfeiffer, she doesn't like men. She's not supportive when they lose the case. I have also heard Commissioner Pfeiffer doesn't like women. So she, and really, sometimes what I find is whoever I rule, and it's not really ruling against, because this is not win or lose everything.
It's about what's the best situation for the child.
What's best for the child may not be what you want. And that's why I'm the neutral party, and I'm letting you know my opinion. Mine isn't sacred, and I don't do the final order right now. That goes to the judge. But I think I'm in my fifth year now, and I'm ready to do those final orders, because I've seen all of the things sort of on this entry level and seen the similarities between cases. And so it's just interesting. Sometimes you hear from people that it wasn't fair because of this, rather than just really take a look at what the facts are and say, well, yeah, I guess maybe I could have a safer environment, or it's not right because I, you know, I work at nights. I can't have the child. But sometimes people don't want to do that, so they project it onto me. But I know at the end of the day, what I really focus on is what I was telling you, which is safe, stable environments, parents who are capable and able of taking care of their children. And that's the family part.
And another thing that a lot of people have trouble with, and I believe you actually actively try to figure out a way to kind of provide information to people. A lot of people don't necessarily know how things operate. So was there something that you did to help provide information for people when they came in?
Yes. I'll actually start with commissioner and I'll go back to lawyer too. Okay. So I believe strongly in access to justice for everyone, and not just equal access, because it has to be fair access. Those are different. So I mean, we can say you have to file the paperwork in room 109. Well, that's equal access. But if you don't know what paperwork, how to get it, or even how to fill it out, that's not fair access. So I really work to make sure we have both components. As a commissioner, I do a lot of paternity. That's what Wednesdays are. So Wednesdays are my paternity days for the most part. And those are people who may have never been in court before at all. They've done nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with paternity court. It just means that either the one parent's not on, the father, of course, is not on the birth certificate, and they need to get that established, or he's on the birth certificate, but there's been no orders in place. And so you've got to have all of that lined up. And in Wisconsin, men may not realize that even if you're on the birth certificate, even if you signed the PATH form, you don't have the rights that the mother has. That's not the judge's fault. That's what the legislative branch has said. Some people think that's an antiquated law. I can't change that. So when they come in, sometimes the father's like, well, everything's fine. I'm the dad. I'm on the birth certificate. It's important to explain you have no rights. You can't make custody decisions. The child can be moved out of the state. You have no say. You know, if the child needs medical care, you may not be able to get it because you don't have custody just because you're on the birth certificate. So I do, sometimes I just explain things like that to people. What I also do is there's specific information they have to be provided, and we're always giving them copies of that. I ask them if they have questions. We go over it real thoroughly if they do. And I do lots of explaining. I joke sometimes, not on the record, but with my friends, that it's like I'm a DJ. And you know how the DJs will have a button and it's like a baby crying, and the button is the chicken, and it's these little, so for me it's the custody button, and then I explain, well, custody is decision making for major life decisions, and I have a little explanation I give in the examples, and then placement is where the child lives and spends time. And so I just explain that right out of the gates, because if I were to ask someone who's never been in court, never had a family court case, do you want joint or sole custody, that's not fair access. They don't know what I'm saying. So they might say sole custody because they want the child just to live with them, but that's not what custody is. So I try to provide them information up front, and I don't want to make them feel less than. So if they don't know, and I say, well, that's not what custody is, custody's this, that can be very demoralizing to people. And again, paternity court, you are not in trouble. I like paternity court. I see the cute babies. I mean, it's great on Zoom right now, because if they cry, we mute them. But, you know, those are good days. And a lot of times, it's a lot of people are nervous, but we can put them at ease, you know, with that. So I do the explanations. In other court cases, what I've noticed, again, for the fair access is people don't know what to do next. And it is confusing. And when I had my private law firm, I had my cheat sheets. I had my checklist, my paralegal and I. So when I open a divorce case, for example, this is what we would do. We had a checklist. When I would do a restraining order, different checklist. If you are not familiar, you don't even know where to start, much less checklist. So really what I did, and I guess I'm known for my forms, maybe notorious for my forms, and some of the attorneys don't like them, but I have a lot of forms. So when you first come into the room 109 for family court, if you want to file a motion, child support, custody, placement, we have a sheet that we give you. I want to say it's on green, but it might be yellow paper. I don't remember. We color coordinate them. That way it's easy for them to grab, the clerks. And it explains exactly how many copies, what the form number is. They're available at the window or online, how you have to file everything. It literally takes you from dropping it at the window, the process they'll call you, you pick it up, literally, on that page. Then the back page tells you how to serve. Because if I told you you have to get service on the other party, what does that even mean? So obviously I'm a lawyer, that means you have to get the paperwork to them. Well, people think you can just hand them the paperwork, that's service. That's not. And so on the back, we explain the sheriff, the process server, and then how it goes and everything. And I make sure that it's not in legalese lawyer talk. I also like to joke that I translate from legalese into regular English for people, because there's so many words like custody, that's just a fancy way of saying decision making. We could say decision making, but that might put too many lawyers out of business. And I would freely admit that as a lawyer. So that's what I've done. I've done a lot of paperwork, a lot of forms. I spent my first year and a half really finding out what was needed and then providing that information for people. Same thing with when they're finalizing their cases. There's just specific things we need. I don't expect them to know it. For many people, this is the first and only time they're in court. So let me just give you a sheet of what I need. Let me explain it to you. Let me know if you have questions. And then when I was an attorney, I can keep going backwards, sorry, chronologically. I was a guardian ad litem in town, so I would be appointed to represent children and vulnerable adults by the judges. And that's an attorney position, of course, so you represent the children as their attorney. And so I noticed a need in the guardianship and termination of parental rights, because if it was a private action and the state wasn't involved, not everybody knew even where to go to get the paperwork. They didn't know how to fill it out. I was volunteering at the outreach center at the at ELCA, ELCA, and I would. They have a program where you can have free legal advice with an attorney. You meet with them for 20 minutes and different topics. Guardianship was one of them. And I had more than one occasion where someone would bring me the paperwork. So they were able to get the paperwork at the window in the probate office. And then they would say, now what do I do? And it's a checklist. You know, you fill in your name, you check this box, you check this. But if you don't do it right, the clerks give it back to you. And they can't give you legal advice. They can't say, well, no, you have to answer this question here. They're just, that's not part of their job. They could put a strategically placed post-it note, but you may not understand what that's what that means. So I would go through that paperwork with them. And so when I realized that this was part of that fair access to justice, which we, again, we can give you the paperwork, but now what? We came up with instruction sheets for that. And that was when I was a guardian ad litem and I worked with our clerk in the probate office, and then I worked with one of the judges, and we came up with an entire list. Here's what you have to do, and the service was also on there because that was important. You know, I also found myself in court a few times, and they had done everything except they didn't know they had to serve. And they would literally say, what's service? Because in guardianships, no one's in trouble. There's, we'll say it's a child who's parents can't be found or they're not available, and so maybe a relative wants to be their guardian for a while. Well, they've never been to court, so what is service? So that was something that we were able to do there with the forms that I created. Nice. I love my forms. And then access to justice too. So it just, it keeps going back. So I could give you example after example. I feel like I've done a lot of that, but through my, as a lawyer, reaching out, finding out where there's a need. And even right now I'm looking and where's a need in my courtroom, in the courthouse, what can we provide to just help get people through this?
Nice. That's really dope. That's really amazing, honestly. Just because, like you said, like, this probably could have happened a long time ago. Someone could have made forms and went out of their way to say, hey, this people might not understand what's going on. Maybe we should make it a little easier for them. So it's cool to hear that, you know, you actually took the initiative. And, you know, it just shows, like, you seem to actually care, you know?
I don't just say I care. Right. For me, those are words. And don't get me wrong, the other commissioners do very similar things. I'm really fortunate. The three of us are a great team. Mm. We get along great. We have very similar attitudes. Commissioner Dels, who does the small claims and other part of family as well as some traffic, I know he has forms he uses. Mm. And he's been a great role model. And I've looked at his forms too. Mm. And the commissioner I filled in for, he had forms. There were issues with them. Mm. And so for me, I wanted to refine some of that. And then I wanted to create brand new ones because when I find myself saying the same thing over and over and explaining things, there's an issue then maybe with what we're giving people up front. And if I can help with their expectations coming in, that's sort of where it all developed from. Nice. Is finding that.
So let's just shift gears just a tad bit. Ooh. Here.
Is this a left turn?
it's not that big of a left turn. Okay. But so I personally always tell people, like, I'm not affiliated with any kind of party or anything like that. I'm not really big on teams unless, you know, I like the Packers, I like the Bucks, stuff like that. But when it comes to, like, life decisions and stuff like that, I feel like anybody should be able to provide information and we should all be able to learn from each other. I noticed that you stated that you're strong on independence and nonpartisanship, and that you're not necessarily looking for endorsements from specific groups or parties, but you're more focused on the individuals.
Right. So being a member of the judicial branch, that's the independent judiciary that we hear all about, we have to maintain the independence. Because when the whole world is falling apart, you should be able to go into court and have someone who isn't on this side or that side deciding the issues for you. And the way that you can maintain that is by making sure that your commissioners and your judges aren't out there on either side of things. And we actually have a specific code of judicial conduct that we have to follow. I'm a member of the judicial branch as a court commissioner. Some people don't realize that that we are part of the judicial branch. And so they think maybe you're like a paralegal, and it's not that at all. So we are just like the judges in terms of authority. They obviously have more, like I explained earlier, but we're part of that. So I'm already bound by those rules. And there is a specific part of the code that says we can't endorse political partisan candidates. So running for president last year, if I wanted to endorse one or the other, I could not. I couldn't have a sign in my yard, probably no bumper stickers. We have to remain neutral. And so that's something that if we don't, and if we're all out there loudly broadcasting, it's kind of dims the light of the judiciary. So likewise for me, I'm not allowed to endorse. There's nothing that prohibits you from taking partisan endorsements as a judicial candidate. But to me, it's the same. It's part of the coin. So on one side, I can't endorse you, but on the other side, you can endorse me. It seems strange to me logically that I would want to take a politician's endorsement. Now, I can't endorse you later on because that might seem weird, but it's not weird when you endorse me. Give me your support. So what I'm looking for are just private citizens, people who know me, can speak to my ability, or who've gotten to know me on a personal level. Or, for example, I am open to organizations, but I want them to give everyone a chance. There's three of us. And so this particular organization might think so-and-so is a better candidate for specific reasons, but give everyone a chance. And so when you have politicians who run to endorse, number one, before they know who all the candidates are. You know, number two, before they know who's even on the ballot. And number three, for really politically driven motivations, I have an issue with that. Just part of my own code of conduct, basically. So, but I have plenty of endorsements. I feel like a lot of people focus on endorsements so early on. There's plenty of support. But I think people also need to remember, you need to make your own decision. And this is actually a job interview and application. And so another example I tell people, is when I applied for district attorney in Denver. You know, I sent my resume, that nice cover letter, and I had 3 or 4 references sent to them from the attorney I worked for when I was in law school. I was down in New Orleans for a summer. That DA sent me a letter, and, you know, maybe someone else along the way. So those letters came in. I didn't call a politician and say, can you write me a letter of recommendation? I know you haven't met me, but here's my resume. Will you endorse me for this job? That's not what people do normally for jobs, is ask strangers. So it, again, it seems strange that you would reach out to people maybe who don't know you. It's a strange, this campaign is strange. So, but I will reach out and give people all the information in the world, because that's what part of this is. I just don't see me changing my mind on the partisan politics. I want to keep politics, I want to keep partisan politics out of the courtroom and maintain that if people vote for me, they know that I am in the middle and I'm going to maintain that neutrality through all of the court cases.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there is a lot of chatter with the, you know, people that reside within the left-right paradigm or whatnot. And, you know, but I just based off my personal experience and how things kind of go for me, just operating as a neutral individual and still dealing with people on both sides of the aisle, but just giving everyone respect and not assuming people are a certain way up front just because of whatever team or whatever, you know, what shirt they have on or whatever it may be. It's just, it's allowed me to receive a lot of information, but then also people seem to be really receptive to it, you know? And that's a culture that I feel like is kind of bubbling and building more and more.
I would like to, I would love to see that. I think we need more people stepping back, taking a breath, and then finding this common ground in the middle. The, where can we kind of link up here? And especially in the judicial race, we need you to stay focused on your neutrality and to assure people too.
Definitely. So, and just to be fair, I should ask, at any point were you affiliated with any kind of political party at all?
No, so I've never been a member of a political party or anything like that. In Colorado, you did have to say which side you were going to vote on the primary on, which is different than here. So here we can just vote in a primary.
Right.
Like for president, you don't have to say which side, but in Colorado, you did have to say, well, I want to vote on this ticket or that ticket. So I did say that I wanted to vote on the red ticket that time. And then there was another time where I was voting on the blue. So it didn't mean you were part of the party. It just meant who did you get to choose from. Whereas here, I don't have to say. I just go in and I pick who I want.
Whoever the person is that you feel is the best person that may happen to fall on whatever side.
Exactly. I really look at the issues and what they offer. And that's how I choose my people for when I'm casting my votes. It's what issues are important to me and what they will provide for that. But we definitely are reaching out to both sides. So the Democratic Party, they invited us, all of the candidates, to just give some information about ourselves and introduce ourselves to their members. Likewise, the Republican Party is doing that Thursday. I have no problem. I have no problem with the politics, the politicians and things. I don't want it to sound like that. I want them to get to know me and make an informed decision. And if they think that I'm the person on the issues that matter to them that line up, cast your vote for me. But get the information. And that's what we're trying to do, is get the word out that way.
Perfect. So what would your goals be? Say everything goes good, perfect for you. You end up, you know, you end up getting the nomination in the primary, and then you go forward and you, you win the seat. What's what are some of the things that you'd like to tackle?
Yeah, so that's a great question. In terms of right away, it would depend on the rotation I'm in. So people also have to understand all the constraints. It's not just one judge in Kenosha. There's 8 total. There's 7 who've been there long before I would get there. And you are part of that team with them. So I would love to see a teen court. We had that in Colorado Springs, and that's where there was a diversion program. They actually had court. It was part of a, they would get reduced sentences, but they would have to serve on a jury and then give, you know, public service things to juveniles. So it was juveniles judging juveniles. And I would love that. That's a huge program. That's a huge undertaking, and it's costly. So to say I'm going to jump in and do that, not right away, but that's one of the things I really see that we might be able to add to the Racine, Kenosha, Walworth district, where maybe we could all come together and do something diversionary like that as well. That is like a big 5-year, 7-year plan. Would love to do something like that for juveniles, because it was so effective in Colorado and Colorado Springs, and they're all over the country. And it really, it's nice to take someone who got in trouble and they're a teenager, put them on the jury, and it's not, you know, it's a very small proceeding, but they're the jury and they will hear what someone else did. Then they go talk about it and what they think a fair punishment is. There's just such a learning aspect to it. That's a big 5 to 7, 10 year plan. And I would have to get other judges excited, because it won't just be Liz Pfeiffer's teen court. There's no way that would happen that way. But it's conversations that can start in terms of right away. Let's just say that they say, okay, August 1st, you are in this criminal rotation, go. I would do what I did when I first became the court commissioner. I would show up the first day, look at the docket, and see how it goes. No changes right away, because I think you have to sit in the job and see what is working and what needs help. And that's where in court goes so fast. So sitting there and running the docket for a few days, for a few weeks, there are some things I can instantly see. Okay, then why are we having felonies at the same time as misdemeanors and OWIs? That is one thing that I've always wondered. In Colorado, where I was, you separated those out. And to me, it makes sense, but it may not work. I wouldn't want to come in on day one and say felonies on Monday, misdemeanors on Tuesday, without actually trying it the other way as the judge. And so that's definitely what I would look at. But again, it would depend. If they put me in family, there's, you know, I would take a look at how the judges are handling it once it gets up there. If I were in guardianship or any of those, definitely see what the needs are and then where we can increase our access and accessibility. So that's sort of my long term, would be more choices. Short term would be, how am I going to improve this right now, right here? Awesome. Yeah.
And what about fair access, like going forward too? Do you think, I mean, of course you're going to have to see, like you said, see exactly how things go, how they're operating, how things kind of maneuver with the system that's already in place, and maybe make changes accordingly. I mean, I suppose people, there's opinions, I suppose you could say, that, you know, the courts aren't necessarily all fair for everyone, depending on whatever your background may be. Some say based off race, some say based off of how much money you make. What do you think you could do to maybe help restore faith in the system?
So judges, we talk about them sometimes being on a pedestal, and they are removed from the community and they're independent. So on the one hand, we want them to be independent, but we want them to be part of the community. And that's a fine line that you would have to walk. I would love to see that the mystique behind court come down. That people don't have that fear of, okay, I have to go to court. I don't even know what to expect. There's things that we can provide on the website. There's resources we can give to people. Even if someone has anxiety about going to court, and again, most people aren't in criminal court. They are in probate, someone passed away, they're in guardianship, they're in juvenile, things like that. So they're not in trouble, but they have that same feeling of, I did something wrong. We have to tear that down so that it's more accessible. We can have, if we even just have pictures of the courtrooms, this is what this courtroom is, and you can click on it, open it up, here's a picture of the judge, now I know who I'm going to see, now I know who the clerk is, I know where to go in the courtroom. You can do a lot. I'm big on technology, not as big as you, but I would love it if we could do a video where you're walking in the courthouse. If you go this way, it's this courtroom. If you go this way, it's this courtroom. Just to give those resources to the community so they can say, okay, it's not that big, beautiful, scary building. It is our courthouse. We can go in there. Let people know also, a lot of people don't, you can go to court anytime. If it's not a closed hearing, you can go sit and watch. So if you are nervous about your family court case, go the week before. If it's an open hearing, go sit down, go see the judge ahead of time, see how they handle, interact with people, and sort of make it more accessible. So that's one thought. that we can provide. Another would be, you know, judges, they go to work, they work hard, and then they go home. But we need to hear more, and we need to listen and see what everyone thinks that we need. We may not be able to do that for you, but we can at least have the conversation and the dialogue and be open to hearing from people. We do that when I was a guardian ad litem, and then my first year and a half, maybe two, as a commissioner, they would do a monthly lunch. It would be the judges in juvenile court, the district attorneys, the public defenders and the defense attorneys and the guardian ad litems, social workers, just a great big group get together, have a big lunch together and talk about what are the issues, how are we handling them, how can we adjust that. So there's ways to get groups together with judges that would help, that you can let us know what the issues are, we can let you know what our constraints are, and then work together in the community that way. So I think part of this is on the judges, and then part of this is on the community. Come to us with a plan. So also, court commissioners and judges are very busy. You know, some of them start at 8:30, some 9, you go till 4, 5, sometimes later than that, sometimes earlier. It's just this, you know, crazy world in court. But if you come to us and say, "Why? How about we do X, Y, and Z?" That might be the great idea that they didn't have time to think of or process. So I'm always open to constructive feedback from people and suggestions. So if someone comes to me with a suggestion on how we can improve this efficiency or anything like that, I'm definitely open to it. I do a lot of cases with the Child Support Agency. We do contempt, civil contempt, and then the paternity cases. So I have attorneys from their office in my courtroom twice a week. And I joke, I call it the fireside chat. So the head attorney there, she'll come in my office, and I do have a little portable fireplace. So my fireside chat, it gets cold in there. I can't regulate the heat in that old building. And we talk about, well, how can we be more efficient? Can I change my docket? And we are constantly making changes and updates. And we're in the middle of doing that right now because the law changed in August. And there's mandatory DNA testing now if a gentleman is not on the birth certificate. It used to be you could come into court, and even though you weren't on the birth certificate, you could admit you were the father, waive your right to testing, and be done that day. Now you can't. So my caseload is getting bigger because there's this, you have to have a second and maybe a third hearing. That's how I feel. So my Wednesdays, and so I can't control the law. And I have to react now to, okay, how are we going to handle all these second and third hearings? Because we're getting all the new cases in the door. We're not processing out as many as we used to. And so that's something we're actively discussing. It's not just going to be me deciding, it's my courtroom and here's what we'll do. I want to hear from the lawyers. How can we better manage this? And that's what I think we want our judges to do as well. And I do that now, and I would absolutely keep doing it on a bigger scale, of course, as a judge.
Yeah, I think kind of what you're presenting is almost kind of like a, I don't want to say new age, but like a kind of a younger approach, more in tune with, you know, things kind of shift a lot, and we have to kind of stay with the times and kind of be open to new ideas, and, you know, you can always learn from someone else. So it's good to hear that, because a lot of people are really stubborn, and it's good to talk to someone, especially someone that's vying for a position that you're vying for, to be open and, you know, want to hear from people, and at least on record saying, hey, like, if you have an idea, I want you to come and bring it to me. You know, I'm not saying I'm going to necessarily do what you say, but I'm open to, you know, making changes if it's something that's reasonable or makes sense or will help fine tune the situation.
So. Absolutely. I love the marketplace of ideas, and I like being in the marketplace of ideas. I'm a huge brainstormer, and there's no bad ideas in brainstorming. Get them all out, poke at them, and then weed through them. But get them on the table. And that's what I want people to do with our judicial system, because change is not going to come from one person. And it's not going to come from us being stubborn, and this is how we've always done it. Okay, well, that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it the way that we should keep doing it. And that phrase, if it's not broke, don't fix it. No, we can improve, even if it's not broken. Let's keep improving it.
Right.
So.
Yeah, we live in the age of of automation now, right?
Great.
I mean, you don't necessarily need robots to do stuff, but it also makes things a little easier for some people too,
right?
You know?
Yeah, and like Zoom. So we have been Zooming and YouTubing. I have a YouTube channel. It's insane. Not for the campaign for Commissioner Pfeiffer for my courtroom. So when the pandemic happened, that it was interesting because we are antiquated judicial system. You come into court, if you can't get there, we'll let you appear via phone for some things. And then in some courtrooms, if someone, they might have a video option where you're on the TV if it's from like a prison in the system. Well, then the pandemic happened and then we all had to just screech to a halt because people can't come in. But we can't not have court cases for 9 months. You can't do that to people. And especially not criminal, but all the other cases that get backed up there. People still need guardianships. People need determinations on their issues. They need resolution. So we were one of the first counties. All of the counties were coming together and really figuring it out. And there's over in Madison, Court Ops was coming up with ideas, and our judges were working on it. And we pivoted so fast in Kenosha County to Zoom and then broadcasting it on YouTube for an open hearing so that people could still watch. So they have a right to watch the hearing on YouTube. And so we have been doing that since March, April. I'm not sure when the exact first one was live stream. And so I'm still streaming on YouTube, and anyone, when I have open hearings, they can go on and they can watch how I'm handling the case. I don't know why that would have to end. I will tell you, for the paternity, like I was joking earlier, but the paternity cases are amazing. I mean, you have people who have babies, who just had babies within a few months. They're not a year old. For them to have to either find childcare or bring the baby or take off of work, come all the way down to the courthouse. They're not in trouble, but we've got to get you these orders in place. And now they have to come back at least one time, maybe more. Or what we can do is tell you, okay, come at 9 o'clock. Use your phone to call in or Zoom in, and we'll call your case. And then you can do that from work. You can do it from home. It's been exponentially helpful in those cases. So I would like to see, when we go back to the courtroom, we have in-person hearings, and we keep these options for people. In my contempt hearings, too, the whole point is someone needs to be working and paying child support. But, you know, you got to come into court, so you got to miss work, sometimes half a day, sometimes a whole day. Not all employers are going to give you time off, and you might have to, you know, whatever, and you might have to drive. Or how about you call in or Zoom in, and we'll do a 10-minute hearing, and done. You don't have to miss work.
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and, you know, it's 2021. You know,
yes, I got the memo. So yes,
they're putting 5G everywhere. It's going to make it a lot easier to make sure this is more flawless and seamless. Yeah. You know, going forward. So
yeah,
and it's innovative and it helps people. You know, like you said, if people can't get off of work, say someone's on their last straw. You know, it could be a reach saying that, but you never know with so many different situations. You know, if you're late one more time, now you're fired and you're trying to get custody of your child, and it's now tough. You lose your job, and now you can't get custody because now you don't have a job.
You can't get the next apartment that you need, the bedrooms for all of that. You know, that judges used to be more, not that they're not now, I'm not saying that, but there's in the beginning, so they called them circuit court judges because they would ride circuit. You wouldn't just come into Kenosha, for example, for your court cases. The judge would go around this big circuit, this big area of land in the United States, and they would cover it. So they could be gone from their home for weeks and months because they were going to the people to hear their cases. And so they would travel more. That's where we got the term circuit court judge. So they would be, rather than say, you all have to travel in here, they would go around. So this is sort of the modern day example of me traveling. I have been all over the place on Zoom. And I've seen a lot of stuff too. That's interesting. You never know when that video starts. And I think this can be sort of that modern day extension now, where it becomes court is more helpful and useful and accessible to people. But we need to get people who know how it works, want to make it work, and want to see that happen.
Yeah, I think people would be more receptive to it as well, you know, if it seemed to be more of like a service than a situation, like you said, where people come in and they're not in trouble, but they still feel like they're in trouble because the whole aspect of going to the courthouse, you know, you walk through the metal detector, Some people there are there for criminal stuff, so it's like, oh, I'm not,
you know. You do. I mean, you have, the sheriffs are there, and they're transporting people to and from courtrooms, and they're in shackles, and they're in the orange suit, and then you're just there for a guardianship. Mm-hmm. It's a different world. It's a different environment, and it can be overwhelming. I have noticed people are more respectful, more calm when they're able to zoom in. Even in family court cases, which can be very high energy level, and people have a lot of emotions, there's something about being in their home, or even when they sit in their car, wherever they are, that they have that comfort that I think translates into how they act. Some people it doesn't impact, of course, but I do think they don't have the added stressor of this courtroom, and I'm elevated in the courtroom, and I wear a robe, and I mean, I wear one on Zoom, but nobody cares because I look like this. There's not that intimidation factor on Zoom that I think we have in court, and we have to, again, you know, I've said it a few times, we have to remember that most people aren't in trouble going to court. This helps them realize I'm really not in trouble. They just need to make sure I have the documents I need or the paperwork and stuff.
Awesome. Well, this is we're approaching an hour here, so I want to just give you the floor here to whatever you want to bring up, mention, and, you know, endorse, whatever you need to say. Go ahead, let it out.
Is this where I do my dance or song? No. Okay.
I mean, if that's what you choose to use the time for, it's up to you.
I don't.
Some people would probably appreciate it. I do like song and dance. I listened to your video, and it seemed like you're a fan of boy bands like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys.
Yes.
Yeah, I was a fan as well growing up. You were a little older than me listening to them. I was a little kid, you know, doing...
It brings a little joy, doesn't it? Just that little bouncy... I won't sing. That would probably drive people really far away. But thank you for letting me come in. There's a couple of things I just wanted to tell people about me. I'm really trying to get people all the information they need. So we do have a website. I feel like I'm on a TV show, right? It is like this, right? Yeah, oh my gosh. Yeah. So the website is www.pfeifferforjudge. Pfeiffer's weird. Let me spell it. P as in Paul, F as in Frank, E-U-F-F-E-R, F-O-R, judge. So Pfeiffer for judge. Yeah, I married into that name. So it's, there should be an I there, but they won't change it for me. So like I said, I grew up in Kenosha. I have a varied background. I have experience in all of the different categories that circuit court judges handle. And I think that's so essential and important for people to understand. You're not just selecting a juvenile judge or a family judge. The judge has to be able to jump into the pool and take whatever cases they're assigned to, and it may not be what they want to do or what they have experience in. For me, if you look, I check all of the boxes on these because I've been preparing. I've wanted to be a court commissioner. The next logical step is to be a judge, and I wanted to offer people that type of experience. I also wanted to mention that I was a law professor. I think that's really important. That helps people maybe understand my view on neutrality and independence more, because I not only taught law at the college level, and that was full-time up at Concordia and Mequon, and I was the chair of the legal studies department. I taught law full-time, developed courses, and then I also taught at Marquette Law School, and that was trial advocacy. And I taught at Carthage for one semester also. So I look at law as you're always learning, you're always getting that information, and it's important that not only do you know it, but that you're able to explain and share it. I think a lot of where I come from in the courtroom is the teacher part of me. I will teach you what custody and placement mean. I'll teach you how to file the paperwork. It's not a game or a trick. I will get you through this. And so there's a lot of overlap. I think that makes me very uniquely qualified. Judges do a lot of reading and learning and studying the law, and that is right up my alley in terms of my legal experience being a professor, and then a private attorney, and then of course a criminal. And I'm from Kenosha. My husband, I think I mentioned a little, he grew up in Bristol, and I grew up, like I said, in Allendale, closer to the lake. And so he was the county guy, and I was the city girl, and we've sort of met in the middle. We're halfway between the two, raising our family. We have two kids as well, and a dog, and sometimes people hear her barking because she's my new bailiff. So yeah, she works for free, but
Do you put a little uniform on her?
You know, I haven't got... She has unique collars, okay. And that's her thing. She sits in the window and lets me know when Amazon's dropping stuff. And I'm really quick with the mute button for her. Nice. Yeah, so I just want people to get to know who I am, both professionally, but then personally. Because you're picking the whole package, mm-hmm. And I literally, this is who I am, and this is what I do. It's not just what I'm telling you right now because I want you to like me. Mm-hmm. Everything I'm telling you, I can show you through the years. Nothing recent. I mean, I can show you recent stuff, but this is really who I've been since I graduated in 1998. Mm. So 23 years almost.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, thank you.
I mean, that's a lot of experience.
It's been a long 23 years.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming in.
No, thank you.
I mean, I really enjoyed this talk. I feel like it was very informative. I'm sure everybody out there is going to enjoy it as well.
And if not, just, you know, they'll comment and there. Please use that First Amendment. It is yours.
Say whatever you need to say, but you can't say that we didn't give you the information.
Exactly. You know? And go to the website if you want. People can email us. I try to be super responsive to people. And also let us know questions. We do a live thing Sundays at 7. That's my creative title. So we're trying to get questions from people. And what I'd like to do is I will do just a quick video, however long it takes. Let me answer this question. Post it on our website or Facebook. Follow us on Facebook. God, I sound like one of those people. Post it on there. And then if you want to know what is her view on X, Y, and Z, let me just click that video. Let me click this one. That way we have some longer videos, but also if you just have a specific question, let us know. We can post it. Other people might have the question. It's important. I want to answer all the questions. So.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And that's Pfeiffer for Judge, right?
PfeifferForJudge.com. And then I'm on Facebook, which is the whole fun world. We're on there now. We also have an Instagram and a Twitter, but I don't know how any of that works. So don't. Right.
So the website, PfeifferForJudge.com, and then the Facebook page, mainly, Pfeiffer for Judge. And then, mm-hmm. I mean, she does have an Instagram and stuff, so maybe she'll upload some photos, maybe.
There's a few. There's more coming. We're unveiling for you.
Mainly the Facebook and the website. And make sure, absolutely. If you have questions, to submit those questions, because this is what we're here for. This is why I wanted to do this, so people can have an idea of who's running, what they represent, mm-hmm. what they stand for, and then also so you know who to ask questions to, because a lot of times there's elections that happen and people get to the ballot and they're like, oh, I have no idea who any of these people are, so we're just trying to help build awareness here. That's my whole angle at the whole thing.
That's how I feel. I know there have been times where I look and I say, well, I don't even know who these candidates are. I go to their website and it's a whole lot of nothing. You know, you look to see, I'm trying to figure out what they're standing for, because like I said, issues matter to me. And so what I'm doing is what I look for. I want you to have all the information overload, whatever you want. There's stuff about my background, experience. We're going to do your questions. It's an open book. And you will like and vote for me, or you won't.
Perfect.
But you will.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for taking the time out to come talk to us all. I definitely appreciate it. And good luck with everything that's going
on. Thank you. Thank you for this.
And I'm sure it's going to be a fun next couple of weeks and months for you.
So. I can think of other words, sure. But I do try to have fun along the way. Absolutely, because you try to capture that as you're going through all of it. But this was great. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in. We definitely appreciate it. This has been another edition of O Word with Corey Elijah, a live edition. Make sure you like the page if you haven't already. Make sure you go and check out Elizabeth's page as well, Pfeiffer for Judge. And we appreciate all the love and support from everyone. We will catch you all in the next video. Bye.